This is the prude here to tell you that anything said about teaching in this podcast is pure satire and is not based on any true person or events.
Nope. A rude, a prude, and an unsolved mystery is for people 18 years and older. Viewer discretion is advised.
You did it! You gonna tell them how rude you're being to me today?
You're the one who was late.
Once again, it was my mother's fault.
Never.
Shout out to my mother.
Hey, Trish.
Thanks for watching my kids.
They're my emergency contact number now. On speed dial.
On speed dial.
I can now tell Ryan I have like 5 friends in my phone.
Really? Who's the last one? Easter's mom.
It's like 911. Elise's school.
Cell just school. Go out or do your emergency contact for everything.
Yeah. You gonna tell everybody like about your big win?
My big win?
Yeah. I was very happy for y'all. Are you gonna
shut up? No, I'm not gonna share about that.
You should, it's a big accomplishment.
Is it?
No, the amount of time you must have wasted watching Twilight for you to actually go into second place. It's like...
Okay, one, I didn't debrief myself on the movies before I went into Twilight trivia. That's just what I have in my head.
That's scary. Because... That is a scary part. Now, that's what you should be
embarrassed about. When I was in middle school, I literally read probably every single book at least 10 times. I would just go back. That's all I did. And then I remember when the first movie came out, that same night I was having my gallbladder taken out, and it was like the worst thing that had ever happened to me in my life because I couldn't be at the premiere.
That's the worst thing. I was like, oh, because you're in pain because of your gallbladder? No.
And I came out of my surgery and I was just longingly looking out the window like, oh, I could be at the cinema.
Why are you like this?
It was a really
big... What was the final question? Like the...
Oh, I was so pissed. It was the bonus question, which is the only question we didn't know, was what was the Shakespeare novel that Alice left Bella a note in? And it was The Merchant of Venice. And I just couldn't. I knew that it was the something of something, but I just couldn't get that.
So you literally knew that thing. You're like, I knew it was the something of something.
Yeah, but The Merchant of Venice. So the something of something.
That literally tells me that you knew nothing.
No, I knew it was something. Ugh. And I had added our points wrong anyways, and like we went up there with 114 points, and I was like, I added, because I had added the bonus question twice, like the one that we did get right about what color owl was behind Edward in the biology lab.
Owl? There was an owl behind him?
In the movie, yeah.
Like in the, behind the window?
Behind him, like chilling out. Like, it's like a stuffed owl behind him.
In the classroom?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that. That's
it was
like
a white owl, and they made it look like he had little owl wings.
I am sorry I brought this up.
I know too much. Anyways.
This is why we don't have
So I would have won as a cheater, but I went up there and I'm like, hey, I added the bonus question twice. Mm-hmm. We just have 104 points and not 114. And she was like, you could have just left it. And I was like, no, that's cheating.
If I want to win my Twilight...
Team Switzerland's got to win. Edward's Lamb Chops. I'm in second.
Oh, your name, Edward's Lamb Chops.
Oh, my God.
You're the one that brought this up.
I know. Did you get a trophy?
We got a gift card. Podcast. This is a rude, a prude, and an unsolved mystery with the rude...
Bram.
And the prude Easter... And, why I had it in my head and it went away. I do this every time because I'm like, I start thinking, I was looking at you picking your nails and I was like, we've got this, I'm going to nail this one. And then it went away.
And I was just thinking about what I wanted to
do. And episode 6, part 2 of Unsolved Mysteries.
Upstairs. Okay, so we have... Walter
Green.
Can you
wipe your nose?
I'm sorry, my nose is running.
We have Walter Green.
You have a tissue right there. I feel like you're not even going
to... This was what was, like, in my cup, making sure that, I don't know, water didn't mold or something. I don't know. It's not my tissue.
Next, the poignant tale of Curly Green, For half a century, he lived a solitary, frugal life in a tiny Omaha apartment. When he died, his friends were amazed that he had amassed a $200,000 fortune. Someone watching tonight may be his heir.
Anyways, okay. Walter Green lived alone in his apartment in downtown Omaha, Nebraska. His nickname was Curly. Mm-hmm. And as his neighbor, like, in the episode, like, says, hey, I'm like, girl, you trying to get in his pants or something? Like, what's going on here? She seemed a little too friendly.
It said he was cordial to all his neighbors. Like, he lived alone, but he was cordial. And, like, the smile he gave in the reenactment was like, hey, girl, like, can I just fucking cut my bushes in peace?
Get off my bush. Get off my junk, okay?
Get off my bush, Carol.
You're out here every day watching me, okay? I'm hey. Over it.
Every day you gotta say hi to me. Just let me do, just let me garden. Oh my God.
This is April 24th, 1978. He had a heart attack while dying. While dying his yard work. While doing his yard work.
At least if you're gonna die, I mean, like, mm-hmm. in a sports car or something, or in an ocean or something, or having a midlife crisis on a yacht or something. Like,
he was pruning his rose bushes.
Poor Curly.
Until 10 years ago, Walter Green lived alone in a small apartment near downtown Omaha. His nickname was Curly, and he lived a simple, frugal life.
How you doing?
He was cordial to his neighbors, but kept mostly to himself. On April 24, 1978, Curly Green had a heart attack. He died while working in his yard.
Yeah. It seemed, I felt very bad for him, because it was kind of like, what? Out of all the things you could have been doing, you died doing the most mundane thing. Like, just... Yeah.
Was it, like, in the middle of a chop?
Yes! His little hedge clippers fell. Stop it! It was super sad.
Carol's like, no!
I'll give him mouth to mouth.
Carol, I don't think that's gonna help. No, I got it. You're not even pushing on his chest, Carol. It's fine.
10 minutes later, I think he's gone. You're still...
Her tongue's just in his
saved in his lifetime $200,000. I was like, Curly, what are you doing? $200,000?
Seems small.
It does, but not in that time, because now that would be about $400,000, which is just shy of almost $500,000.
I got $862,000. That's what my Google told me.
You're using the wrong inflation.
I just said, what would this be now?
It's usually about double the amount most of the time.
Which still, they say you need like $1 million to retire now.
What?
Yeah.
You're going to be living in a box, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I'm teaching until I'm crawling, like, gasping for breath. I'll be in the middle of teaching and dying.
Oh, my God.
Class, turn to page.
And they would literally not say anything.
No, they just...
The way they find out is they're being too loud. And they'd be like, really? They just pull you out by your legs and then bring another teacher in there.
It's my dead body.
Jesus.
Oh, Lord. We're only
teacher shortage is real, guys.
For real. They just need a warm body in there, mm-hmm. pretty much.
Babysitter.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't leave a will, and the next of kin couldn't be located, which I was like, does that mean he had one, and they just couldn't be located? Or was it they're just like, no, he doesn't have any?
They couldn't find one for him.
Curly, during his lifetime, had accumulated more than $200,000. He left no will, and his next of kin could not be located.
So, 10 years after he died, his $200,000 was the largest unclaimed estate in Nebraska history. Which I thought so too for the whole state. I'm like, that's still a small amount for the whole state. For him, I was like, that's a good amount, but for the whole state, like,
yeah.
But I guess it goes to show you, though, everybody comes out of the woodworks if you have money. You know what I mean? I was kind of curious as to how he didn't have, like, some uncle or, like, my second cousin. I'm his second cousin from a different marriage. I think that's the
crazy thing about it is, like, there was no one coming to be like, no, this money is mine. Like, he had no connections to anyone in the world.
It's almost like he wanted it that way, though. Just like the other guy, the Monopoly guy from our, like, was it first or second episode?
It was our first... Joseph Salinka.
Yes.
It was our first episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he kind of wanted it that way.
Yeah.
He was very mysterious about where he came from. And then he had a friend, Catherine.
When it came out in the papers, that he had the amount of money that they said he had, we were shocked. I can't imagine how he amassed that amount.
Says that she was shocked about how much money he had, and she wondered how he had so much. And then I put a little side note. Maybe he was D.B. Cooper. He was
like, this was D.B. Cooper.
I knew it. Fucking Curly.
But they said that he probably got it. They found, like, stocks and bonds.
Mm-hmm.
A coin collection and...
And he owned the apartment he was living in. Yeah. Like a boss. I put, like, a boss.
But it's like everyone was so shocked. And I'm like, yeah, but that's just three ways you make money.
They found stock certificates. I understand they found a coin collection. And they found, much to everyone's surprise, that Curly actually owned the apartment building where he was living.
Yeah.
Like, stocks, like, coins, or collecting something valuable, and real estate.
When people have money, I mean, you don't want, like, some people... That's how you can tell. I read that, like, people who are, like, rich actually don't ever, like, talk about it, and people who are the ones that have a little bit of money are the ones that are always bragging and wearing their, like, Louis Vuitton from head to toe. Ridiculous. I said, Rob tells us there is a love story. I said, what? I said, ooh, this is going to get good.
Please sell this as Rob sold it. Or sold it. I can't even speak today.
It was very sad.
It was. I was great. Jessamine. That's all I got to say.
Fuck that bitch.
He said, it's also a love story. A sweet and haunting one.
I heard haunting and I was like, oh, yeah, this shit's
going south real quick. That began 8 decades ago. It's like, damn.
It is extraordinary. A man who lived as simply as Curly Green could have accrued such a large sum of money. It is even more extraordinary that the money remains unclaimed. But this is not just a story of missing heirs and unclaimed fortunes. It is also a love story, a sweet and haunting one that began nearly 8 decades ago.
So we don't know much about Curly's life, but when he was nearly 17, he hopped a train bound for Omaha, and he arrived outside the city near a small farming town, Shiler or Skyler?
That was I don't know.
Shiler.
The farming community.
Yeah.
We don't know much about Curly Green's early life. What we can surmise is this. When he was nearly 17, he hopped a train bound for Omaha. Curly jumped off outside the city, near a small farming town called Skyler. Curly immediately began to pound the pavement, looking for work.
And he immediately began to pound the pavement, looking for work.
What was the point of that? Like,
he wasn't going to sit on his ass, all right? He's out there pounding the pavement.
It literally just shows him getting off the train and he was just walking down the street. Yeah. It didn't look like he was, like, asking for help, like, asking for work. He was just literally pounding the pavement, was just him down the street, not saying anything.
But Al Rominger offered him a ride and a home-cooked meal
with his family. Are you fucking kidding me? You're lucky he wasn't a serial killer.
Yeah.
He just went in with him and he was like, oh, right? Oh, you need somewhere to stay too? Are you fucking
Come home
crazy?
With me. Get in my car.
Oh, God,
Come
no.
into my house.
So lucky he wasn't a serial killer.
They were, like, real trusting back then.
Yes.
It looked like the kid was...
Sure, why not?
He looks all right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he looks fine.
Yeah, you know who also did? What was his name?
Mm.
The one that was considered good-looking before they realized he was a fucking crazy ass. Lured all the women. The famous one.
Ted Bundy?
Yes!
Oh, and, like, the judge was like, it's such a shame that such a man like you would go down this road, and I would have employed you if it was any other, like, circumstance.
Fucking crazy.
Yeah, insane. So, Catherine, this is how he knows Catherine, because she was... a Rominger, which is the family that he went to eat with, they thought he came from Denver. He was a nice-looking young man. And then the reenactment, it has, I bet it's been a while since you tasted home cooking like this, Curly. And he's like, yeah, a little while.
No, did you see when he flirted?
Ew, I was, like, vaguely incestuous.
It was just weird. Goes, the mom says, what does the mom say?
She goes... do you have any brothers and sisters?
Yes, but none as beautiful as your daughter's hair.
Ugh!
I got a creepy vibe from that. I'm like, why would you pick that line?
That was so awkward. It was awful. And I'm like, that's, mm-hmm. you don't recall, like, maybe your sister's attractive to hit on. Not okay.
Do you have any brothers or sisters?
Well, none as pretty as your daughters, ma'am.
And I was like, that's insulting to your sisters too, bitch. If my brother said that, I would be like, fuck you, first of all. Fuck you, all your girlfriends have been ugly.
Every single woman all you dated.
Okay? Fuck off. All right. He found work at a local garage. Mm-hmm. Rob says, the automobile was still a pretty newfangled machine.
Yes.
I was like, what? A newfangled? Like, did mm-hmm. they make you say that, Rob?
Oh, yeah.
You should have said no. Because that didn't sound...
He's like,
newfangled, huh? Let's go for it.
Yeah, I was like, I don't think anyone's heard that in a while.
No, it sounded...
What did it do, though? It got our interest. We're like,
no, it did not. It made me secondhand embarrassed for him. Like,
he doesn't feel embarrassment. He's Robert Stack.
Of course not. But I was like, ooh.
What is it?
They began courting, and I'm like, they began dating.
He began courting Jessamine Rominger.
Isn't that the same equivalent, right? Courting and dating?
Yeah, it's the same. I mean, I think that, like, they couldn't go places just by themselves.
They did. They just a sister.
Yeah, they're not supposed to, though. Back then.
Did you get where Catherine's like, I didn't care where they went. I just got my nickel and dime. I said, Catherine gave zero fucks as long as she was getting that money.
He was paying her off to go have alone time with her sister, and she's like, whatever.
She literally says that, though. I didn't care. I just wanted my nickel and dime. You go, Catherine. You go to the movies and spend that nickel and dime.
She's only 9, just chilling at the movies by herself.
Fuck it. She's got her money. Leave her alone.
You wasn't a spendthrift. And I used to like it when I have to get paychecks, because he'd give me nickels and dimes. He and Jessamine would go wherever they went. They had some friends in Schuyler, but I didn't care where he went. I got the nickel and dime.
And Curly never went with any other girls. He only courted Jessamine. So, like, if they went to a party or whatever with other friends, he was only seeing her or talking to her. And then we have World War One, and so Curly enlists, and so leaves Jessamine. She is training to become a nurse, and he goes to war.
Did you see their pictures?
Yes.
They were stunning.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I said they were both stunning. Holy shit, no wonder he was in love with her. I would have been in love with her, too. I mean, she's a bitch later, but I knew what she was about to do, I was like, oh, wow.
She was a very gorgeous bitch.
Very, very gorgeous bitch.
And he was handsome, too.
He was. Mm-hmm. He was.
So he returns from the war, and goes back.
The music was very, like,
foreboding.
Yeah, I was like, ooh, I don't like where this is going. Because they said it like... And after he came back from the war, and I paused it, I was like, this isn't good.
Full of hope.
Yes!
And I'm like, oh, no.
Curly served on the European front. It was his unenviable duty to drive the dead and wounded to the makeshift army hospital. The suffering he witnessed scarred Curly. But when the war ended, he returned home, full of hope, to Schuyler, Nebraska, and to Jessamine.
But he goes to find Jessamine. And sees Catherine, and Catherine's like, oh, I'm sorry. She's gone to Nebraska with another man.
She didn't say that. She just said she was gone to Nebraska. And I'm like, thinking in my head, Curly, you're stupid if you think that the reason she didn't go, the reason she went was, like, just for her to go on her own, because that was not the time when you did that.
Well, Catherine says she's like,
she didn't Jessamine, she
but Jessamine had, like, a plan for her life, and he wasn't it. He wasn't making enough money, and he wasn't educated. And so... He goes to Nebraska and follows her, but she marries someone else.
Jessamine liked him, and he was a gentleman always. But she wanted other things out of life. And he didn't appear to be educated. And his earning capacity wasn't great, I suppose. And anyhow, they didn't go together anymore.
But the thing is, he tried to get a string of jobs. It reminded me of, what was that movie? Sweet Home Alabama? For that guy, she went to New York, and then he followed her, and then he saw, like, how, like the life she wanted, and he wasn't that person.
He followed her?
He did. He followed her to New York for, and then, but the girl said that she saw, he once he saw how big the city was and like what it took to live there and stuff, that he knew he wasn't ready to do that because he didn't have money to do that.
Oh, okay. But I haven't seen that one in a minute.
Sorry. Anyways, he took a string of jobs though before trying to make it happen for her. Like, and that's why I felt bad because he had taken like a bunch of different jobs and none of them were working out for him. Because honestly, when you're in like, I'm sorry, that's why I hate high school, being like, what do you want to be? What do you want to be? I'm like, sometimes you don't know right away what you want to be, and you can change your major when you're in college a million times and still come out of there and be like,
I don't want to do this.
Teaching degree, and you know, people treat you like shit, and then you just don't want to even be a teacher anymore.
And they're like, is this all life is?
Is this it?
Is this it?
And then there's a teacher shortage, and they're so mean to you. All right, sorry. It was a rough week last week, too.
We're on spring break right now, but I'm just counting down the days.
Man, I was close to tears a lot this week.
Oh, no. The way you were getting your grades put in? No. Using Easy Grader?
It's not my fault. I'm sorry.
I'm doing the best that I can, and that's for real. Doing the best that we can.
You're trying so hard. All right, we're not going to tangent. But
that's for a different...
Like I said.
That's what I say. That's for a different podcast.
Have another one with teacher stuff.
Rude, approved in the woes of teaching.
I know, that would be so good. So anyways, he took a string of jobs. I think personally that he just was really young. He had just come back from the war. He didn't really know what he wanted to do, so he was trying to find a job that fit him, and none of them did. By the time, you know, Jessamyn was just like wanting a better life, like a guy who made more money. He didn't, and moved on and married some other guy. And I put, she got to Omaha and Curly Fall getting jobs, but she married someone else. I quit that bitch.
Because how did she? Catherine said he didn't have enough earning power.
That's what I didn't like. It wasn't because she was like, you know what? I'm not attracted to you that way. It was more like she didn't like him because he wasn't making enough money. And I thought that was kind of like.
Really? And so, like, this whole thing of him, learning how to trade stocks and the coin collection and becoming, like, a real estate or, like, a owning real estate, it just seems like his, like, fuck you to her.
No, like, I feel like maybe he always thought that maybe it was, like, a thing where he was like, well, yeah, maybe it was too fuck you, but I don't know, sometimes I feel like maybe he just thought he would get her back eventually.
Because you should know that Curly never moved on.
Never.
Never dated anyone else. Never got married, never
had kids.
We're
gonna do this again. I guarantee you he probably dated, but he never married anybody else.
He hooked up.
Even in Notebook, the guy hooked up. He was hooking up with that lady who was a widow.
I know, but the Notebook is shit.
Yeah, I don't really like that.
I hate the Notebook. Mm-mm. So stupid. But.
Just like Titanic. All right, anyways. But yeah, he, you know, never married, never had kids. He was alone for 60 years. Was it 60 years? Yeah, 60 years alone. Curly, you could have found just like. Somebody.
No, he was in love.
Oh, Jesus.
Curly refused to give up on Jessa. But Jessamyn Rominger married another man. Curly never fell in love again. He never married or had a family.
It was like Edward.
Oh, no. We're not going here. Bella. No, Bella.
Do I like toxic relationships? In my media. Maybe. Okay. Anyways.
Stand you. We are not comparing them to Bella and Edward. I think too, when all this happened, he was so young and they weren't together for a super long time for it to be like he knew. He might have had this, how do you say, this image in his mind of what he thought the relationship would be like. Because he honestly, they weren't together that long before he went to war.
No, and like. And he was courting someone and like the little flutteries you get from dating is so vastly different from moving in with the person and living together and creating a life together. And so I think he was probably like every time he thought of her, he was thinking of how he felt on that high that he was living and not like the reality of the day to day life of marriage.
Yeah. That's what I think too, because like there's no way he could have known. They weren't together that long. They were barely courting. He went to war. He came back. And she was gone.
And war in itself, like, he, like, they said he came back with a lot of hope and, like, wanting to find her immediately. And it's, like, that's also probably what kept him going through the war. It's, like, well, I'll just go back
to and that's the thing. In. That's the thing where a lot of relationships didn't last after anybody went to war. Not a lot, but some of them, because they would marry their person right before war to be like, I want to marry you. And then mm-hmm. they got back and they were kind of changed.
Yeah.
And then they thought that there was going to be, like, this magical courting period, and you're like, oh no, this shit is fucking reality. We don't have any money.
Yeah.
You went to war and have PTSD, and now we have like 3 kids, and you don't have a skill,
mm-hmm.
and now you have to find work.
Kind of like Pearl Harbor.
Oh my god. Can we not? I hate that movie.
How many, like, movies am I going to name drop? I don't know. We'll see. But can you explain to me the part where Catherine's like, she thinks he just saved every penny that he earned, and she said that he put a can on the pilot light in the morning and would come back in the evening and would be like, oh, it's just right. What is that?
I don't know.
What does it mean?
I know she said that he put a can, but I thought she meant like he went to the other room or like brushed his teeth. I didn't know he was gone all fucking day. Carly, you could have burned down your apartment.
And pilot light is just... Explain to me what a pilot light is.
I don't know, but it's super dangerous, Carly.
It's like you have to light, it helps you light something, your stove, right?
I'm not sure.
So he wasn't lighting his whole stove, just the pilot light?
Oh! It's like always on, isn't it?
I think so.
If you have like a gas.
And then you can like turn it and it lights everything, right?
I don't know. People are listening to us, are you fucking kidding?
Someone explain pilot lights to us.
Real.
And can you cook on them? Is that safe?
That is not, I can tell you right now, that is not sound safe at all. No. Like, at all.
Mm-hmm. It's like he was using a crock pot.
I know. But like, Curly, you had 200,000. Go to Applebee's. No, fuck Applebee's. Go to Olive Garden, mm-hmm. Curly. Mm-hmm.
Well, he said he would get up in the morning, and after he'd eat breakfast, he'd put a can on the pilot light. And by the time he'd come back and ready for lunch or the evening meal, it was just right to eat.
Damn.
And in the reenactment, it shows him, he like, get so the sad. Pan, the can off the light, and it's, like, too hot. And he's like, oh, ow.
And then he's, like, eating his chili with this sad little thing of tea. And he's like, oh, that's delicious. I'm like, Curly, Olive Garden.
It's so sad.
It is so sad. I love Curly.
Curly had a friend. His name was Riley. Did you get the last name?
Mm-mm.
Riley something. And he...
Oh, I know who you're talking about now. Yeah. I'm like, what are you talking about? But I'm like, okay.
And he was Curly's barber and was also a member of the Masonic group.
No, but I like how he literally says, I was his friend. Sometimes he let me go to his house.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's me and you. I'm like, I'm her friend. Sometimes she lets me go
to his house. Like, once to hang in my backyard, we go to your house.
We both have different things to offer. You have a backyard and yeah, I don't.
Exactly. You have, like, more room and 2 bathrooms, and I don't.
Can't.
I really never really got that close to him, actually. I thought I was a pretty good friend of his because he did invite me over to his home on occasion, and we did sit around and have a cup of coffee and talked about things.
But it's funny because he was also, like, I thought we were friends, but I guess I didn't really know the guy. And then he found a postcard from Brooklyn, New York, and he was like, interested in it, and Curly like took it away and put it up real quick.
Yeah, that's the thing too. You weren't that good of a friend if you knew that he was kind of private and you're like grabbing his shit. He invites you over for the first time and you're like, oh, let me start grabbing shit from your house and reading it. Like, guy, like, come on, my man. Like, no, if he invited you over, you know he's private. Why would you start grabbing shit? Mm-hmm.
He's like, I just need to know more, Curly. I just want to know it all.
Fucking cheese muscle? Like, God, grabbing
Carol hands. Set him up. Carol put him up to it. Hey, go over there and see what you can find out about him.
I need to know. I need to know what the love of my life. I feel like that his neighbor is, like, in love with him. He had no clue, or he just was not interested. It was like, enough,
Justin
Carol.
Is the only one for me, Carol.
Get out of here. What are you doing undressing in my bedroom?
Again, Carol.
We've talked about this. Put the whipped cream away. Get out of here.
Once, Riley noticed some postcards and pictures neatly displayed in Curly's apartment. He was curious to know if they were from Curly's family.
And I picked one of them up, and it had a postmark of Brooklyn, New York, and I asked him something about where that was. It was a long ways from home, and he said, never mind, and he took it and put it away. Well, it made me feel like I was probably intruding on his privacy of some sort, and that he had something that he maybe didn't want revealed, or maybe he'd had a tragedy in his lifetime somewhere along the way that he was trying to avoid talking about.
Just poor can't Curly. Take a hint.
Poor Curly was just trying to go to sleep. Get out of here, Carol.
But we learn
nothing.
We really nothing.
We learn. It's not. I'm not kidding.
They guys. Have Josh Butler, who's an investigator of heirs, and that's
literally
a nice job
us,
to have.
Yeah, nothing.
He's basically like, we don't know his parents. We don't know his brother, who he said died in a shootout.
All the leads they had like led to nowhere,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing they had was that at his funeral, he had a wreath, like a really nice wreath placed on his, I guess, his casket.
Yeah.
And they had a note, and a fucking Rob, our boy Rob, has the note. Did you see this?
Mm-hmm.
He was like, it was sent by Mrs. Joel Greener.
Mm-hmm.
From Denver, Colorado.
Which is like Greener Green, you know?
Yeah, I know. I'm like, maybe he changed his name, because you could do that back
mm-hmm.
then, because nobody
real
could
easily.
Because
he just, like, he made his census himself. He was like, here's my name, and here's what my parents were called.
Could you imagine if you can do that? You're, like, mad at Ryan, be like, I'm changing my name tomorrow. My name is not brown, it's going to be green.
Get a new ID? Why does it say Vanessa Green?
Don't worry about it, bitch. You know what? You start acting right, I'll go back to brown.
I'll leave this right here, and when you start treating me right, I'll erase it, put it right back to how it was.
At Curly's funeral, a mysterious wreath of flowers became the final clue to his past. This card came with the flowers. It signed Mrs. Joe Greener, Denver, Colorado. Perhaps Mrs. Greener is the key to the puzzling life of Walter Curly Green.
But Rob gets to, like, kind of going into the next story, like, he has a thing with props this episode. Because he's like, look, I'm holding the note that was left, or the, yeah, the note.
By who?
Because he has this one, and then in the next one, the Swain one, he's holding
oh.
the glasses.
I know, I put in my notes, I'm like, Rob, they
mm-hmm.
trusted you with all this shit?
Yeah.
Here,
he was
Rob,
like,
just take whatever
yeah,
you want.
Yeah, I've moved on up, right?
Do you want the DNA too?
Evidence. I know, and he's touching it with no gloves.
No gloves.
Robert.
Like, I'm sorry, did you ever want to solve this case, or just let everybody fucking touch the evidence? Fuck it.
It's going to be on imagine how many handlers it went through before it got to him.
Everybody's like pristine and taking care of it, and fucking Rob was like, meh. His glasses. Let me clean them off. He puts them on. Man, they were blind.
So my hair got in there.
Somebody get on my hair real quick. God.
Next, the story of a double murder in a tiny Baptist church in rural Georgia. The only clue is a pair of ordinary glasses left behind by the killer.
I hate this one pissed me off. This one just upset me in every single way possible.
Yeah, this one was pretty bad.
So, our next for mystery number two, we have Harold and Thelma Swain, who were murdered while they were at church. So they were leading a church service, and a man came into the church and basically called Harold over and shot him. And then, of course, Thelma went to check on Harold, and so he shot her. And what they didn't say in the show, but what I found out, was that Thelma died with her hand, like, on the back of her husband's head. Like, holding
him.
Oh,
my God. Oh.
Yeah.
Why'd you tell me that?
I had to! I was so upset.
Where did you read this at? I didn't want to go too much into it. I was going into more of the aspect of, like, who the fuck did this?
Mm-hmm.
Because I was so, like, it was predominantly black. It was in Georgia.
Yes.
Which the population, and was it Waverly, Georgia? The population was 825. Does that mean, like, in they're just their little pocket?
Yeah. Just their little predominantly black
I feel
town.
Like, I don't know. The guy was white.
Yeah.
It's in Georgia.
Yeah.
He sought him out because the person who, the main witness who is under, not undercover, but what do you call it?
She didn't even, have an image at all. It was just her voice. Just her
talking. And it might not have even been her
voice. It might have been her reenactment actress's voice, honestly, because she was pretty
I don't blame scared. Her. No. She lives in a small place, and they probably know her. Fuck that. She was leaving to go pick up her daughter from work, right?
Yeah, she had to leave the service like early.
It was like a little service of 11, was it 11 women?
I have that it was on March 11th, but I don't know how many women there were.
It was 9 women who attended, and at 8:50, one of them excused herself to pick up her daughter from work.
Mm-hmm.
And as she was leaving, she saw this man. And I immediately, if I would have seen that man, I would have been like, absolutely fucking not.
Yeah. Fuck up.
I can't help you. I don't have any money. I gotta go. And so she was nice, of course, and was like, can I help you? And he's like, I need to speak to, and she opened the door, and he points at that guy, and points at Harold, and I'm like, that is so creepy.
And in the reenactment, Harold's the only man there.
The only one. So it's like he knew exactly who he was, and he was pointing exactly at him for a reason. This was all was it purposeful?
Yeah.
It was all purposeful. And I guess she leaves, Harold comes in. Mm-hmm. Did she even hear anything? I don't think she even heard.
I think she takes off before the shots are fired.
They have, like, a slight conversation for, like, what, a couple seconds before this guy starts shooting at him.
Yeah.
And everybody takes off.
Yeah.
To the pastor's office, except for Thelma, obviously, because that's his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Which I was like, oh, why couldn't you just spare her? Like, God. Like, what was the purpose? Like, what was the purpose? Like,
cause I know the thing is, purpose.
If he wanted to kill as many people as possible or as many black people as possible, why didn't he kill the first lady?
But it wasn't, that's not what he wanted to do.
I didn't see that.
That wasn't his thing.
I didn't know the reason.
Like, it's not even a theory at this point. It's just fact. And it's a fact that they should have known back then. Because they talk around the actual, like, reason in this episode so much.
You tell me, because I didn't know. I thought it was racism, but I didn't know.
It is.
I know, but, like, how? Like, he... I thought it was because in the episode when they're introducing Harold, they say about how he's a deacon, he's a county jury commission, and he's a black spokesman.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, if you're going to kill somebody, it's going to be somebody who's like the spokesperson for the black community.
He was like the dominant speaker for that town for black people and like black activism. And also, like, he was able to do what like MLK could do as well, which was like create a relationship with white people who were in power, so like they would like have the ability to get the rights that they wanted or have more of a foot in the door because they made those connections. And so that's like what's scary to people is like when you can cross that like line of like it's not just black people, but I can also like pull in white people into my agenda as well. And so Harold was one of these leaders. Thelma was also big in the church and his wife. And so that, I mean, it is. It's like why he was killed and only him and her because they wanted to take away that leader.
The leaders of the community. Mm-hmm. What I did not like, and I don't know if you caught this, is they were like, Harold Swain was a deacon, a member of the, you know, I just said it, the back spokesman. Thelma was also involved in the church.
Yeah.
Bitch, I bet you she was super active. Yeah. And the thing is, I didn't look it up, but I could tell you right now that Thelma wasn't just at church being like, okay, this is all I'm going to do. I'm like, how dare you? Sorry. Yeah. No, women couldn't just fucking, that's all they could do is just be at church and be a wife. Like, you know she probably was in like a lot of different groups, especially in a community like
that. If he was involved, she was involved.
List some of them. Assholes. Damn.
Harold Swain was a well-respected deacon of the church, a member of the county jury commission, and a spokesperson for the black community. Thelma Swain was also closely involved with church affairs. Harold and Thelma had been married for over 43 years.
Sorry, I didn't want to go there, but I was pissed off about that.
His wife.
And Thelma, she was involved in church too. Anyways, I'm like, fuck right off.
But Harold and Thelma were married for over 43 years.
Shit, yeah.
We meet Robert Swain, who's Harold's brother. And he said that Harold was always jolly and laughing and, like, the sweetest person, and would, like, help you with anything. He, like, would give you money, any favor that you needed, he would do it.
Harold was always happy and jolly, laughing. It's something like that might have come natural to Harold because of his love and kindness for everyone. And he would always go out of his way to help someone at any time, day or night, no matter what time. If you needed a favor of any type and he could do it, he was there. Same thing about Thelma.
And then we hear from Steve Rall, who I can't make out half of what this man said. I don't know if it, I think it's the accent. But he said that everyone basically loved Harold, and that was the most people he ever saw at a funeral in his life.
Oh, yeah, that part I got. I'm like, aw, he seemed like he generally liked him.
He did. Even the caption said inaudible. I was like, okay, I'm just making this one up myself.
Leave him alone. It's ridiculous. Oh, they were in there. The thing is, too, the reason that this is, seems like premeditated to me was after the shooting happened, Thelma shot the women go into the pastor's office. They're in there. I guess they, I'm sure they locked it and they're all fucking terrified. Like, holy fuck. They try to call and then they're like, the line's like dead.
The women rushed into the pastor's office and tried to call for help. The phone didn't work.
Stay.
20 minutes passed while the women waited in fear. Finally, one of them made a dash for her car and went to summon help.
So, yeah, like, they obviously cut it, which means that they obviously knew what they were doing. Mm-hmm. This service they were at was a Tuesday night Bible thing that they happen every fucking Tuesday night, like I said.
Yeah.
Gotta fucking switch it up. Y'all should have switched it up. Mix it up every once in a while. They were onto a routine. Mm-hmm. They knew. They cut the line.
But it's not something you ever, like, expect, especially in a small town of like 825 people, when, like, I don't know if I'm sure
in Georgia, fuck no, lock your door
in the 80s.
I just checked that shit too right now. I mean, in general, I'm an interesting person to begin with, so I just would have been like, Harold, I'd feel safer and more comfortable if you just like lock the door, please.
You said untrusting person,
very
interesting. You said uninteresting.
Oh, that too. I got COVID, now I'm uninteresting.
Oh my god. So then...
the phone doesn't work. Well, before the massive manhunt, they're in there, the power's cut. Not the power, the phone, and one woman, like, bravely, like, risked, after 20 minutes, like, hoping that he was gone, mm-hmm. and runs out to her car and fucking takes off like a bat out of hell and is like, tries to get help.
Yeah.
There was a lot of physical evidence at the scene. Bullet casings. Two pair of glasses. The one we were able to determine belonged to Harold Swain. The other pair, no one knew who they belonged to.
There were bullet casings and two pairs of glasses. One belonged to Harold, mm-hmm. and the other they didn't know who.
Yeah, they said there's a lot of physical evidence.
And it's, one of the cops is like, it has to be a transient. That's because of how cheap they look and all the parts that were on there. And I'm like, how do you deduce that, like, these are transient glasses? Like, mine looked like they were stepped on.
They said it was because Special Agent Joe Gregory said that they thought it was a transient because it was obviously came from someone who couldn't, like, afford glasses or afford to, like, keep up with getting glasses every year because they were, like, welded together at one point in the... It had missing eye pieces or, like, not unmatching eye pieces. Yeah.
The first gut reaction that I had was a transient, because the glasses appeared to belong to a person who did not have enough money to properly maintain their glasses or to buy glasses when they needed them.
But so how would you know that? I mean, literally, I'm telling you, my glasses look like they've been stepped on.
Yeah.
Like, if you see them, they look smushed.
And mine are missing my little
ear. It's not because I can't afford to get them. It's just because I've been lazy. Mm-hmm. I have a fresh pair sitting at the fucking eyeglass place right now. It looks like a transient's fucking glasses now, and they slide off my face because they're, like, not even, like...
Maybe it's the welded together part.
Maybe.
I can't weld.
But even then, like, let's get a eyeglass expert in the 80s.
Mine would be, like, it wouldn't be welding. It would be super glue. It was super glued together. That student I had who every day where he came in last year, he had to sit there and put his glasses back together like a fucking puzzle.
Oh, my God.
Before he would, like, put them all crookedly on his face and be able to see my board. And then he was so happy when he got new ones. It was so adorable.
Thank God. When these kids mess up their glasses, I always am like, oh, God, please tell me your family has money. Mm-hmm. Please tell me everyone has money. Because I always feel so bad. Because, they'll sit there with one
one little stick missing.
Yeah.
hold it up like they did when not they used to getting. Watch like Victorian era yes. plays.
Not even kidding, because some of these kids are blind as fuck without mm-hmm. their glasses, and you're just sitting there like, oh my god, yeah. like there's nothing you can do, like.
So put you right up near the board,
mm-hmm.
right up there.
These are the glasses found on that night, and they're not ordinary glasses. The lenses are thick, the surface pocked by a welding torch. The earpieces don't match. Were they dropped by the killer? When the police discovered these glasses, they investigated the theory that the murderer may have been a transient.
Anyway, so they were welded, and the eyepieces didn't match. I said, I thought the transient theory was stupid just based off the glasses until they went into the fact that the church was right off a highway, and there were a lot of transient people that, is that a word we use now? Or is it a different word?
I don't homeless? Know. Well, I thought transient meant more like they were just passing through.
Yeah, but they make it seem like a bad thing. Like it's transient.
I mean, yeah, because you're like, I don't know, it just reminds me of, like, transportation. Uh-huh. So, transient.
All right, sorry. Well, anyways, the theory made more sense to me when they mentioned it was near a highway, because I'm like, okay, that makes sense, because one of the ladies explained that from time to time, people would come in off the highway and mm-hmm. get a meal from them. It's like, because I was like, because they were still so sweet. Like, the church would give them meals. Like, and they were so trusting.
Yeah.
Also, the theory that was kind of blown for me when they mentioned that they still had $300 on them.
Yes, Harold had $300 in his wallet.
Like, if you're trying to, like, steal,
mm-hmm.
you would have fucking taken that.
And someone even says, like, if the guy had asked, like, give me all the money that you have, Harold just would have done it. So it's like he didn't shoot him because Harold was holding up money from him, because he just would have passed it over.
Yeah.
They start to think that the crime was premeditated and the church had been cased because, like you said, the phone lines were cut. And so obviously they knew someone would try to go for help and then wouldn't be able to access it because they cut those phone lines.
Other evidence suggests that the crime was premeditated. The authorities feel that the church had been cased before the brutal attack.
And then are you ready for this, guys? Are you ready? Another fucking composite.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. I thought we were done with composites.
We're on Unsolved Mysteries.
Composites are, like, a huge deal in the 80s, guys. People literally thought in the 80s, this is how we're going to catch
people. I think that's the only, not the only way, but, like, the best way that they had to catch people, because they didn't have DNA.
That is the worst fucking thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, so they had to go off of eyewitness accounts and composite sketches, because they didn't have
DNA. I was watching this, and Ryan's like, what is this? Is that a picture of Neanderthal? Because that's what the composite looked like. I'm like, he's like, was he the last one? I was like, shut up.
The last one, Ryan. He was like, put this joke in your podcast.
There you go, babe. It literally did, though. I'm like, what is this?
It did. It looks weird.
No.
But the woman who saw him was one of the ones. And they said they got all of the witnesses and they all made different sketches. So, like, one of them had long hair, one of them had short hair.
I think they went with the one who was talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
Close to close. Eye to eye.
Yeah.
But she even said when she was talking, she said, I saw he had long hair. But then later in she accounts, she said he had short hair.
Yeah, when she goes to see him in actual
you
lineup.
Don't even know what you're like. You can't, like I said, and I'll say this all the time, forever. You cannot just base this off of that for seeing somebody for a couple of seconds. And she even said
it was in passing.
She even said, I wasn't trying to look at him.
And the thing she said was like the most recognizable thing about him was his scuffed boots.
He was calm. I was thinking that he was there for a handout. He didn't seem to be someone to hurt anybody. I didn't see any weapon or anything. And it seemed like he had on scuffed boots. And he had long blonde hair, shoulder length hair. But I really wasn't looking at him that hard, you know, because I wanted to leave.
Girl.
And I'm like, where are you? Like, what conversation are you having? We're just like, boots.
But they said for 5 months the police used a composite to search for the killer, and I put shocker. Mm-hmm. They couldn't find anything. No leads off the Neanderthal picture.
Because no one could agree.
Yeah, no one could agree on what they really look like. So they, I guess they went with hers. Like I said, because she was the one that they thought had the most close-up look at him.
But speaking, not I guess not really the composite, but the woman who had the close-up, like the clearest view of him. On July 5th, 1985, they pulled over a car for a minor traffic violation, and in the trunk they found an automatic weapon. This was Donnie Barentine.
Submachine gun. What the fuck are you doing with that, bitch? Like, you were up to no good.
Yeah. And Donnie had apparently told people in Florida that he had murdered a black preacher and his wife in a church. And then they interview him, and it says after several interviews that he admitted that he told them, like, yeah, I told them I murdered them, but I was lying. And he smiles about it like it's a fucking joke.
This just tells you what the time we're living in, where people, like, you're saying that shit, and I honestly don't think he did it, but, like,
what? He didn't. Like, they didn't what say an Unsolved Mysteries.
Like, you're just saying it because you think it'd be cool to say that you murdered black people? Mm-hmm. This just tells you where you're at, where we're at, like, at the time.
They don't say it in Unsolved Mysteries. But he had, like, an alibi, and a legitimate one. He was, like, 325 miles away when the murder occurred.
Three suspects were taken into custody. One of them, Donnie Barentine.
We were given some information by some acquaintance of these people that Donnie Barentine had told people in Florida that he had murdered a black preacher and his wife in a church. After several interviews with Donnie, he admitted that he had told these people in Florida that he killed a black preacher and his wife. And then he just smiled and said, but I was lying to him.
Which brings me to another point. He took a lie detector test, and the cop was like, oh, he flunked that test. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, those things are so unreliable.
Yeah, those too.
Mm-mm, don't take one.
Don't ever take a lie detector test.
Even if you did it, don't do it.
No. Immediately call a lawyer.
Call your lawyer.
Just call your lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Also, R says, too, if you ever get pulled over for drinking or driving, do not... What does it do? The little...
Breathalyzer?
Yeah. Refuse it and just wait till you go back to the... what do you call it? The jail. Mm-hmm. Don't do any of the tests because they're going to record it, and it's really hard for them to help you once you've gotten it recorded and everything. Oh. Best just to wait because there's no evidence. There's no video or anything that's incriminating.
I didn't know that. Mm-hmm.
That's why it says, I gave you that card. It says, do not blow. All these defense attorneys always use this slogan of, like, do not blow. And I'm like, oh, that's... that's clever, guys.
Way to go. Penis jokes.
Funny.
But so they have Donnie in a lineup. They bring in the witness or the eyewitness to see. She was taken to Jacksonville to do the lineup. And it was funny to me because in the reenactment, it's like, they're like, okay, you're going to look into this room. There's like six guys in there. You're going to tell us if you see the man who you believe committed the crime. And it's like, Mike, lights.
I know. I feel like we were watching like a sitcom. It's like, what is this?
You don't watch SVU enough. They don't do it like that.
Five individuals on the other side won't be able to see or hear you. Lights.
All I kept thinking was like, please God, make sure that she, because they say you won't get seen, and I was like, oh my God, what if they like turned it on and it was the opposite way? And you could see her. I was like, oh my God.
I'm just like, I didn't see anyone.
I forgot what it was. It was like a sitcom that happened too.
Yeah.
Like they turned it on, it was like the opposite way, and all these men were like, I'll fucking kill you.
That's not a fear that I knew that I had until just now. Thanks.
That's why I was like, man, I'd be terrified if they absolutely do the wrong thing. And
that's like, I'll stand over here until you make sure that they can't see me, and then I will step into.
I know it was something I watched. Mm-hmm. It sounds like a Seinfeld thing, but I don't know. Anyways.
But like she said, she couldn't see any of them in there. She said one man did have the same boots, but she wasn't sure. So,
and how long had it been since the point where she only brief encountered him for a couple of seconds between the brief encounter for a couple seconds and then the lineup?
This was July 5th, and the murder occurred on March 11th.
Jesus Christ, dude.
It's a while. Uh-uh. And, like, you can sit there and, like, she lost two people who she probably cared for. And, like, she could just go over it and over it and over it. And it just, like,
your face changes every time.
A little bit. Every time. Where am I? So, 1 year later, they don't press charges against Donnie. They were dropped, but he does end up serving 5 years for the weapons that they
found
on him.
For having probably a submachine gun. What the fuck did you need that for? Jesus.
But then we come back to Sergeant Gregory, Joe Gregory, and he is flipping through some, like, cases, I guess?
There are these things, guys. It's, like, not... It's a composite, but to be, like, more, like... They have noses and mouths already in the computer, and then they kind of let them pick it.
Yeah.
They're, like, what do you call that? Like, generic mouths that are, like, thin mouths, like... And so they come up with a face. So there are, like, thousands of possibilities that to wind up, like, one of the same faces. And so he finds a match with, it's called, like, composite kits.
Yeah.
And he finds one that matches. He's like, what are the odds? And I'm like, actually, that's really common that it would, like, literally look the same. To me, I'm like.
And it's like.
It's still stupid.
People look the same. And you look for the same traits in people. It's like. Are you focused on their eyes? Are you focused on their, like, teeth? Whatever.
To me, it wasn't. He was all about. He's like, what are the odds?
It gave they me look, chills.
It gave me chills. I'm like, it shouldn't have. You're stupid.
It's like a long-haired white guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's a lot of them at this time.
Yeah. For realsies.
So, this was the person that he found, though, was a Kansas suspect who was wanted for armed robbery at a church.
It came to nothing, though, because they didn't even have his fucking name.
Yeah, he called and he was like, who is this? I'm like, oh, sorry. No leads on that one, man.
Why didn't bring it up, then? What the fuck was the
point? I mean, both of these episodes were like, man, you don't know nothing. We don't know fucking anything.
Oh, we got a lead. We got a lead, guys, but it went nowhere.
Yeah.
Then we got another one. It also went
nowhere. No, nowhere. So why include those ones that went nowhere? Mm. To Phillip's face. And I'm not having it.
Mm-mm. We're not having it.
So they end off with this thing. It's like, were the murders pre-planned, or if so, why, and what was the motive? And that's what they talk around in this whole episode. No one is like, why would this happen? They were such sweet people. Why would this happen to them? Bitch, because of racism.
It's true.
Like, just say it was a hate crime.
The way so many people became a suspect is because they were saying that they shot these black people and didn't. Mm-hmm. They really didn't. They just were fucking saying shit like that because they were fucking racist. You don't fucking say you shot black people just for funsies.
No.
I'm sorry. You're a racist piece of shit.
It just seemed like, to me...
Oh, I wasn't racist. It was just a joke. I was just kidding.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was funny.
Yeah. I thought it was funny to say that I had killed black people.
No, not a good joke.
So at the end, we get an update that they had arrested Dennis Perry. He was convicted of the crime because he had a grudge, quotation marks, against Harold. But what I read in my research was that he was interviewed. Of course, the interview was not recorded. And he said that he was near the crime and maybe a weapon could have gone off. So this was just like a coercion thing where they basically just like... How I feel forced his hand.
Did you not get the part where there was a witness who came forward who testified that she, I think it was a woman, he told me. I'll tell you what he said. He says all this. What they didn't tell the jury when they brought her to the stand, she got $40,000 for a reward.
From the police?
Mm-hmm. And the money that this case is fucking insane. The money, and I don't know if it was all 40, but that's what I read in the article. The money that it was from seized drug money that the police had. But they didn't mention that the fact that this woman who testified was like, oh, by the way, she got a reward for giving this testimony. Which this guy sounds like a piece of shit anyways, but still, he shouldn't be going to jail for being a piece of shit. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, unless you're guilty. Unless you've committed some crime.
I don't think
crime.
He did. I think he was just a random piece of shit.
Yeah. I mean, he's probably racist, but...
Oh, yeah.
But he didn't kill them.
No.
Is basically the end of that.
Later, he was exonerated.
Mm-hmm.
After all, they found DNA.
Yeah, after DNA.
There was a hair from the glasses.
Yeah, the hair trapped in the, like, eye piece.
Yeah, it happens when you put it on. And it wasn't his. It wound up, did you get this part?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. This case was so crazy. So, after when he was exonerated, the way he was exonerated is they went to the a lady who they thought her son was a suspect.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked her, hey, can we have some of your DNA or hair? She gave it to them and it was a match.
Yep.
And then the next day they found her dead in her mm-hmm. house.
And in the articles, they didn't say there were, like, no cause of death was given.
Yeah, I thought she... I am assuming she was murdered because mm-hmm. after that, they started... They didn't start investigating him for the Swains, but they started investigating him for the mom. They, like, searched his house. Or maybe it was for the Swains.
It was... Well, because... This is Eric Spare, by the way, is his name.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Eric Spare.
And he was a suspect at the beginning, but... had an alibi where someone had called and said that no, he was working that day, and come to find out that like it was just someone impersonating his manager and he didn't actually have that alibi, but the police didn't fucking double check
maybe
anything.
No, you know what, it was him
that called
that said I killed these two N-words, and
yeah, it was Eric.
It was his ex-wife's dad who called, and he was like, no, that was my boss.
Yeah.
It wasn't me. And the boss is like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, mm-hmm. they just literally took his word for it.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, oh, okay, sounds legit.
They didn't do any, like...
Moving on.
And there are multiple people that will place him at that, like, at him working, is what that call said.
That's so crazy.
But they didn't go back and, like, ask those people that could place him at his job. Like, they didn't do their job.
They didn't care.
And, like, for all of these people to say, like, the police themselves, the special agent and the policeman who's in here to say, oh, they were friends of mine and I cared for them and they were pillars of this community. But when they were murdered, you didn't do your job and figure out who did it, because it would have been easy enough to get Eric for this however many years ago, 20 years ago.
It was so weird. I don't know why they never picked up on that.
Mm-mm.
It was always really, like...
But the latest thing that I found was after DNA came back that it was his hair in the glasses, August 2020, they were searching his house, but I didn't find anything.
That's all I got is I stopped whenever they were like, the mom was found dead after she gave her DNA the next day. I was like, this is enough for me. I'm like, good Lord. The story was insane from start to beginning.
Mm-hmm.
From start to beginning, yeah.
Yeah, from the start, and we do a full 360. We go back to the beginning, and it was still crazy.
Stop! I'm trying to Olive Garden. I'm hungry.
Wasn't all I wanted to say. I'm just so sad. I'm so upset.
It was really fucked up how they started off well enough because they were like a massive manhunt, and they actually legit seemed like they were actually trying really hard. But then when they were like, hey, "It's a white person."
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he said he didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. That's it. If any, I'll continue looking for updates on this one, because...
I am shocked that they didn't, like... I don't think
they have his DNA.
They...
Oh, that's what it was. They've exhumed Harold's body to see if they can get anything else off of him. Like, any other evidence or DNA, which makes me sad, because he has to be, like, brought up again. And Robert was, like, he's still in a lot of pain, not knowing, like... the, like, explicit details of the murder or who did it. And I was like, I hate when they have to be exhumed. It's like, you know, like, when we find mummies in Egypt and we, like, raid their shit and, like, uncast them or whatever? And, like, I hate it. I'm like, they were buried and they were buried in a way, I don't know. Somebody, I just don't get it. We don't pull up white people.
That's true. Do we?
Like for, like, mummy type shit. Like, we don't study old white people.
Because they're boring.
Exactly. Let them, like, we exhumed, like, 300 of them a couple years back, and I hated it.
It's just that they're, but it's because of, like, the back then, it was just so interesting that they mm-hmm. were, like, all the practices and rituals they did and stuff. It was just
I can so see it, so. Like, understand it back then, but now, like, you know how they did it.
There's just some civilizations where they... And I was watching one, and it was, like, digging up, what was it? What was the freaking civilization? And they were trying to put it eloquently,
mm-hmm.
like, and this is where the women sat and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I bet you if these people came back, they'd be like, bitch, that's where I slept and breastfed my kid.
Yeah.
Like, why are we trying to romanticize this?
Whoop-dee-doo.
Like, this is where I fucking, you know, went to sleep with my husband. He was mm-hmm. being an asshole, you know? I made him sleep in the other fucking tomb or whatever, like... Like, I just kept thinking how hilarious it would be to be, like, these people would be like, no, that's
yeah,
not.
Yeah, we're like making this huge production out of the lives that they like, led, and it
this
was just
is
like
where they worship. Like, no, this is where the kids fucking place were hanging out.
Yeah,
while we were in the other room chilling, playing dominoes,
drinking our wine, trying to get a fucking break.
At least that's what I like to think, because I feel like they romanticize it a little bit. People are people. They're mm-hmm. gonna people.
I did see this thing the other day where it's like they found an old breakup note, and it was like, I know that you've been running around with this person. I mean, obviously it was like in old language speak, but running around in this person a few times over. This makes me so sad because you were my favorite concubine. Either come pick up your shit or I'm leaving it at the,
fuck yeah.
at the worship or at the temple for the sun gods.
Right. Throw it all out. It's an old school from the top of the temple. Get your shit out of here, bitch.
You were my favorite concubine.
Everybody in the other pyramids are like, oh shit. Oh shit. It finally happened. I knew that bitch was, I knew he was fucking around.
I told you she was running around.
Mm-hmm. You saw, uh-huh.